It's always a great privilege to see so many people coming on a Friday evening to listen to a talk, and not only come here but listen online. It must mean some of these teachings are having a good effect on people, bringing them peace of mind, which is so important and so valuable in our life. I do travel around a lot and see that it's the one thing which people really aspire towards, to find some peace in their life. And every so often that things happen in our life, disappointments, tragedies, accidents, which can sometimes disturb our peace. But hopefully that when you come to a place like this, you find these skillful means of restoring that balance in your life so you can be peaceful and happy and not just enjoy, but actually learn from our life. It seems to be that the times when things so-called go wrong, and I say so-called go wrong because nothing really goes wrong in our life. Whatever happens, it's happened there as an opportunity to learn and grow. It's one of the things which I have learned in my life as a monk. Never to say that things are wrong or things have gone wrong. But even say, even the accidents which happen to us, even the disappointments and the things which other people say, oh, you poor thing, I say, no, I'm thankful for that. Maybe at the time it's difficult to bear, it's painful, but it teaches us so much. If we didn't have these times of difficulty and problems in our life, look, we'd never grow, we'd never learn at all. That's why, you know, just as little means of reminding myself, I always say the difficulties and problems in life are growing pains. Because I think when you're very young, a teenager, or just, you know, maybe in the early years of your life, you know, there are some aches and pains in the body, which is just the body is growing really fast. And that's the same with the mental world, the emotional world, the thing inside of yourself which you recognize more importantly as you than your body. It's like growing pains of life. So many of you are old enough now that you've been here, done that, you've had difficulties in life, and a lot of times you realize they were opportunities to grow, you know, to forgive people who have hurt you. You know, and sometimes you wonder, what on earth do they do that for? How can a person be just so stupid and so cruel? And then you look back in your life and, yeah, I've done the same thing myself. I've been stupid and cruel sometimes as well. So what do you do with that? Instead of getting angry and upset and making the world a worse place to live in, instead of actually starting a war, I don't mean just with another country, I mean with your ex-partner, you know, with your ex-business person or somebody else who didn't care for you and treated you badly. Instead of starting a war, we learn how to forgive, learn and grow from what happened. Just saying yesterday, one of my old stories, and they are golden oldies, and people expect that when they come here. And the golden oldies was one of the people who was training in my monastery. And as they were training in the monastery, just keeping what we call the eight precepts, this is when you go to a Buddhist monastery and you stay for a few days, even on retreat, there's some things which we have our rules. Just to keep it more simple, we don't eat in the afternoon or evening or night time, we just eat in the morning time. And anybody who thinks, how can you eat very much in the morning time, you'll get hungry. Just look at me. I've been eating one meal a day just in the morning time for 38 years. Look how much weight I put on. If I ate in the afternoon, evening and night time, I don't know what I would look like. So just eating in the morning time. But this poor man, he was just training to be a monk in my monastery. He came to see me one morning feeling very bad. He said, I couldn't sleep the night before. I felt so guilty because the previous afternoon he'd snuck into the monastery kitchen in the afternoon, made himself a sandwich and ate it. He'd broke one of the monastery rules. And he said, I felt so guilty and so bad, I didn't sleep, and I just want to confess it to you because I'm the boss monk, the abbot. And so I said, very good, you've acknowledged the mistake. Now we know, forgive yourself. And we all make mistakes sometimes. It's a big deal. It's not the sort of stuff which we call the police and put you in prison for. So now learn from it. Eat more at lunchtime. You've got all these things which monks can eat in the afternoon, like chocolate. You can have as much chocolate as you like. and orange juice and honey and fruit juice and lots of stuff you can have. So have more of that if you feel hungry in the afternoon. You don't need to take a sandwich. And then he said, is that all I need to do? I said, yeah, that's all. You can go now. He said, aren't you going to punish me? I said, we don't do punishments. He said, well, you have to. If you don't punish me, he said, I'll do the same thing again. Now, some of you are like that. So I was put on a spot. He wanted to be punished. And I had to think of a good Buddhist punishment for him. And a good Australian Buddhist punishment. And it just happened that day I've been reading a book called Robert Hughes' Fateful Shore. And it was about the early history of Australia. When they send all these convicts from England and they land at Botany Bay, and if ever they did anything wrong, they were punished really severely. They were whipped with this terrible whip called the Cat of Nine Tails. So I'd just been reading it that very morning, and so I told this young man, I said, okay, you want a punishment, I will give you a traditional Australian punishment. I sentence you to 50 strokes of the cat. Now this young man, you should have seen his face. It went all white and his lips started to quiver. He really thought that in a Buddhist monastery we whip people. Like many of you don't know what goes on in a Buddhist monastery, especially if you've never known much about Buddhism. But then I had to explain to him what 50 strokes of the cat means in a Buddhist monastery. I said, we do have two cats. Find one of them and stroke it. One, two, three. That's what we call 50 strokes of the cat in a monastery. I said, that is your punishment. And I'm seriously, you've got to find that cat and stroke it 50 times. So you can learn some compassion. Because once you know how to be compassionate to a little cat, maybe then you can learn how to forgive yourself and not seek punishment for your mistakes in life. Instead, accept them, forgive them, learn from them, and grow from them. That is Buddhist teachings. So because of that, if any of you have misbehaved over the New Year period, I hereby sentence you to the penance of 50 strokes of the cat, or the dog, or a rabbit, whatever else you've got in your home. In other words, when you learn compassion, this powerful force inside the human being, it's a total opposite of that force which seeks to punish and cause harm upon other people and yourself. Such a ridiculous thing for human beings to punish each other. They don't need that. Do you need that? What happens if you get punished? You feel so bad, it makes the pain worse. Forgiveness. What does forgiveness do? Compassion. And you say, well, if we don't punish people, they will get worse. No, the opposite happens. How many times have we been punishing people and do the populations in the jails get less? Do people behave? Of course they don't. Compassion is far, far more powerful. Forgiveness. Because that opens the opportunity for learning. This is why things never go wrong in life. They're the opportunities to learn and grow and become a better human being as a result. That is when people ask me, quick, what is the meaning of this life? Why are we here? We are here to learn and to grow. It's just like a big school, like a university of life, where we learn, and we're not just to learn how to be powerful and how to keep power and how to get what we want in life. No, we're here to learn what it is we really want in life. What is we really want? What is it you really want in life, most of all? I've got another old story now. I do repeat these stories because sometimes they're the very best. That was the story of the monastery, the temple somewhere. And early one morning, about 4 o'clock, the head monk was woken up because there was a sound in the shrine room. And as he woke up, he thought, first of all, maybe one of the junior monks were up early meditating. But then he thought, no, not one of my monks, they're all lazy and sleep in. So he got up and he saw there was a burglar in the monastery trying to open the donation box. You know what that monk did straight away? And he said, hello, how can I help you? And the burglar looked at him and said, what do you want? Keep away! And the burglar got out a knife. And the monk said, if you're trying to open that donation box, it's much better to use a key. Here's the key. And the thief said, is this a trick? And the monk said, no, here's the key. The donations are there to help people who are poor, to help make people happier in life. What's the point of having donations? Is it just to build big temples? Is it just to make things look huge like big cathedrals? Or is it for the purpose of increasing the happiness and well-being of all human beings? You're a human being. You know, we practice compassion and kindness, so here you are. If you need the money, take it. You're obviously very poor. So the thief took the key to the donation box and started emptying all the money into his pockets. And that's when the monk, who was very kind, said, when was the last time you had something to eat? And the thief said, none of your business! Now, I always like telling stories like this where I can shout, because I don't usually get permission to shout. So here I can have a bit of fun. None of your business! And the monk said, look, in the cupboard just above the donation box, there's some food left over from this morning. Take some, eat it, I'll give it to you. And the thief was very hungry. So he did open that cupboard, but still keeping one eye on the monk, pointing the knife at him. And he took the food, put some in his mouth, and the rest in his pocket for later. And don't call the police! Shouted the thief. Why should I? Said the monk. I've given you the money. I've given you the food. Have a great day. And the thief ran away. Now that is a real monk. A monk who is supposed to be letting go. Don't we ask you to let go? Don't we say you to be compassionate and kind? So, let the monks be compassionate and kind to the thieves as well. You know what happened next? What happened next was, a few days later, the monk was reading the newspaper and he found that burglar had been caught. He'd been robbing another house where people weren't so kind. He got caught by the police. He was sentenced to jail for about 10 years. Fast forward to 10 years and a few days, and the monk, a little bit older, but just as kind, was woken up very early at 4 a.m. He went into the shrine room, and guess who he saw? The burglar had come back again. And the burglar was standing next to the donation box with a knife again. And the burglar said, do you remember me? And the monk said, yes, I do. Here's the key. And that's when the burglar smiled, put down the knife, and said, I don't want the money or the key. He said, for the last 10 years in jail, I haven't been able to get you out of my mind. I've been thinking about you every day. You're the only person I've ever met who was kind to me. Even though I was trying to rob you, you gave me the money. Even though I was pointing a knife at you, you were concerned about the fact I was hungry. And he said, I have come back to steal again, but not money or food. I've come to steal the secret of your kindness and your generosity. So please teach me that. And the thief became a monk. Because that is he realized what he really wanted in life. Isn't that what you really want in life? The secret of kindness, of generosity, being able to give each other the benefit of the doubt and not be so critical and fault-finding, but having a community of family where we can literally look after each other with kindness, where we can all be respected for who we are, knowing that we're not perfect, but we're trying, we're growing, we're learning. Just to have that respect and that kindness. Isn't that what people really want? Once you understand what people really want in life, we give that the greatest priority. Next week I'm going to Korea to give some talks. I really do travel around the world a lot. By the way, it is South Korea, not North Korea. So I'll be quite safe, I'll be back. And this newspaper sent me some questions for an interview, and they asked, you know, such questions. Because, you know, in Buddhism, you know, does Buddhism really support, you know, the way that we run our economies in this world? You know, going for material growth and prosperity? He said, yes, of course we do. You know, Buddhism doesn't want people to be poor. It doesn't want the communities to stagnate. We want to have growth and prosperity. You know, greater sort of facilities and hospitals and whatever for people. But he said, but that's not the main priority. The main priority is to give what people really want. And that is the kindness, compassion, the ability to work together. What's the point of having a big house if you live in it by yourself? Because you can't have a partner, you can't have friends in life. What's the point of being rich if you've got no one to share it with? What's the point of being powerful if you can't even control your own mind? What do people really want in life? And when you understand what people really want, it changes the priorities of life. Yes, you know, wealth and comfort is important, but what's more important is the harmony between peoples, their mutual understanding, their kindness, their wisdom, trustworthiness, what we call virtue, that's really important. I know the amazing thing is, if you make that the most important in life, be able to trust one another, now, keeping things like precepts, being virtuous, being kind to one another, forgiving people, you know, when there's a problem, you know, that will increase the economy as well. When I go overseas, I do many conferences as well, you know, strange conferences and Buddhist conferences. And one Buddhist conference I went to, we had a fellow who was not only just I think he was on the committee of one of our monasteries in the UK, he was also a professor of economics and an advisor to the Bank of England. So he was quite a senior economist. And he gave a paper on the importance of Buddhist monks and nuns to the economy. And this was like a top economist, a professor. And he was saying, no, Buddhist monks and nuns, what contribution do they make to the economy? And he said, first of all, they don't make any money and pay taxes, so that's a negative. Number two, they don't have children, because actually increasing the population is also supposed to be a boost to the economy. He said, that's two negatives. But he said, they're great positive contribution to the economy is encouraging people to trust each other, to keep their word, to be truthful. He said, there's something in business, and I'm sure you understand this, even you may not be an economist, is when you don't trust people, you have to factor in a certain amount of money in the contract and waste a lot of time trying to enforce it to make sure what people say they're going to do, they actually do. Whether it's like, you know, building a house, whether it's renovating a Buddhist center, whether it's like buying something on the internet. Are you really going to get what you asked for? Is it really going to? And if you're actually doing the work yourself, are you going to get paid? Especially paid on time? Now, how many times do people say to you, oh, yeah, the check's in the mail? And of course, it never is in the mail. People lie too much. And I remember just building our monastery down in Serpentine. Sometimes the contractors would lie to you. I would always remember that time I'd ordered a concrete truck. We had all the workers there. And obviously, you have to pay these workers by the hour. The concrete truck was going to come at a certain time. 10 minutes, 15 minutes late, and I rang the concrete company. I said, the truck hasn't arrived yet. He said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, it's late. It's just left the yard. 10 or 15 minutes later, it still hadn't arrived. So I rang them again. I got another person on the end of the phone. And he said, oh, yeah, it's just left the yard. And I said, another person just told me that 15 minutes ago. You're lying again, aren't you? Because it was a different person. They hadn't realized I'd rung before. It's the common excuse. The check's in the mail. The truck's just left the yard. Your call is important to us. It's just another lie. If the call was really important, you'd answer it. So because of that lack of trust in our community, you can see just how difficult it is to do business. And that costs everybody a lot of money. In time, in bad feelings, and so much more. So this economist was saying, because of the contribution of monks and nuns, and priests and other people who teach people to be virtuous, to trust each other, to be compassionate, because of increasing the amount of truth in our society, that is a huge increase to the economy. And this was coming from a professor. So I said, look, it's not just money and it's not just prosperity. It's also the trust, the honesty, the kindness, which actually underlies all of that. And I remember there's a monk who, he met one of these guys who was multi-millionaire and who goes around the world making all these big contracts. And he said exactly the same thing. He said, all I need to do is to forge these connections with people. And the only way I can do that is actually to just really understand my emotions, being able to connect with another person, so I can form relationships. And he said, relationships are the key to my wealth. It's just the friends which I've developed. That, who they can trust me, I can trust them. This is where I made my fortune. And I always remember that little saying, because how many of you can forge a relationship with other people? That's sometimes why you're poor. To form a relationship with another human being, and most importantly, to form a relationship with yourself, is so difficult. Why is that? And a lot of time is because we're a bit scared, we hold back. Sometimes, we're just like the old the ox in the china shop. You know, we're trying our best, but we're not very skillful. One of the most important things is skillfulness with your speech. I say this because now I've got ears. I listen to how you speak to one another. People criticize each other and put each other down so much, especially in a marriage. They have this old saying, in the first year of marriage, the wife listens to the husband. In the second year of marriage, the husband listens to the wife. In the third year of marriage, the neighbors listen to both of them. Because they argue so much. Now that's not every marriage, but the reason you giggled at that is because there's a lot of truth in that. Why is it that people can't say nice things to one another? So one of the things, it's New Year's. If you're going to make a New Year's resolution this year, to make the New Year's resolution, I will only speak kind words to my partner. I will never criticize them. Even if they deserve criticism, I will not do that. And if you can actually change the speech patterns, it is amazing just how relationships can change. No one likes being spoken to badly. No one likes that at all. And there's an old story. I'm going to tell an old Buddhist story. This is one of those stories which I read in the books called the Jataka Tales. These were supposed to be little stories told to children to teach them how to be good people when they grow up. But because many of you didn't read these stories because you're not Buddhist, it's lovely telling them. It's called the story of Nandi Visala, the ox. So this was a story told by the Buddha of this ox who was so strong and so powerful. He was really like a super ox. And his owner was this farmer who was struggling to get by. The farmer would work so hard, but because the rain never came or because the crops weren't good that year, he managed to survive, but only just. And so one day the ox came up and said to the farmer, he said, look, I think I can help you. There's a really rich guy in town who really likes gambling. He said, I can win some money for you. Why don't you go up to that rich guy who loves gambling and say to the rich guy, I've got an ox who can pull 100 carts all tied together full of heavy rocks. And the farmer said, look, you know, I know you're very strong, but no ox can do that. And this ox said, I can. This is the point. That rich guy won't believe you. So you can make a bet on him and I'll win the money for you. So he went up to the rich guy, this man, and said, my ox. He should have really gone up to the rich guy and said, I've got an ox who can talk. That'd be much better. But you know, this is just a story, okay? But anyway, went up to the rich guy and said, look, my ox can pull 100 carts all laden with stones. The rich guy said, no one can do that. And he said, yes, he can. I'll bet you $10,000 or the equivalent. The rich guy said, you haven't got $10,000. He said, well, I don't need it. I'm going to win. Anyway, I got my farm and got other things. You can have that if I lose. So the rich man thought this was a stupid farmer. Because sometimes people who work out there in the country, we think that because they haven't got any education, they're not very smart. But I remember growing up as a young monk in this village in northeast Thailand and being amazed that even though I had a great education from Cambridge, some of these villagers, no education at all, because they live close to nature, they had far more wisdom than I had. They understood things which I had never seen before. They had like the natural wisdom. Sometimes we learn so much at school and university, we don't understand very much about ourselves and life. We understand about books and knowledge, but that's a lot different than truth. But anyway, so the bet was made, and so they borrowed all these carts, they filled all the carts with stones, and they tied the ox to the front cart, and the whole town was out to see this, and see whether this ox could pull such a lot of carts. And the farmer went up to the top cart, and he got out a stick and said, okay, ox, pull those carts. And the ox stood still. Stupid ox, pull the carts, he shouted. Still the ox didn't move. And then he hit the ox with a stick. Pull them! And the ox didn't move. And people laughed. What a stupid man that was. No ox could pull such a large amount of weight. So the farmer lost his bet. And he went to a tree, sat underneath it, and started crying. He was ruined by believing his stupid ox. A few seconds later, he felt a wet nose in his ear. It was his ox. Why are you crying, master? Said the ox. Because you made me lose all that money. I'm ruined. I don't know how I'm going to survive. I'm going to be in debt for the rest of my life. Why did you lie to me? And the ox said, I never lied to you. You said you could pull those carts. But I can. But you didn't. But I can. But why didn't you? And then the ox said, because you shouted at me. And because you call me stupid ox. I'm not stupid ox. If I'm so smart, I could go to Oxford. Don't laugh, that was a bad joke. And you hit me. That's no way to treat anybody. He said, listen, you go and bet that rich man 20,000 that I can pull those cards. They're still there. So he went back to the rich man and bet 20,000. So they hitched the ox to the front cart. And this time, of course, the man went up to the cart and said, nice ox, kind ox. You know, if it wouldn't be too much trouble for you, would you mind, you know, if you please, you mind just putting the carts a little bit, just a little bit, but if it's too much for you, never mind, you can give up, I don't care, but I don't want you to hurt yourself, because I love you, ox. Just try your best. So because of those kind words, the ox strained every muscle. If all the veins were standing out, you know what happened? Nothing. And so the guy said, oh, forget it. But no, the ox really put in super effort. And you know what happened? Just sweat came out, but no cart moved. Give up, I don't want to kill you. It doesn't matter. It's only money. And at that, the ox put super duper effort in. He pulled like no ox in the history of the world has ever pulled. And there was a little creak. as one wheel started to move, and then another, and then another, until all the carts started moving. And the man won his bet. He lost 10,000 from the first wager. 20,000 he got back, so he was ahead. And he and the ox live happily ever after. You know, somebody once said the reason some of my talks are popular is because I treat people like children. Just like I've told you a children's story. This is nice to hear a children's story. But that has an enormous effect. Now, if you want your wife to do something, don't go, come on, how many times do I have to tell you? You know, we're going out to the Buddhist center. Come on, get your act together. How many times do you shout at your husband, come on, darling. You know, just the cricket's over. No, come out. That's not the way. Instead, if you want your husband to do something, start striking, dear darling, if it's not too much problem for you. I know you're very busy, not very poor, but can I borrow $10, please, or $100, even better? No, but if you can't afford it, it doesn't matter. Wouldn't you like to be treated like that? It's amazing, when you are treated with kindness, you really want to work harder. That actually works, even in the office. How many times are you bullied in the office? How many times are you bullied in the home? That is why the relationships become so dysfunctional. It's not what we really want. We want a bit of kindness and respect. If someone gives me kindness and respect, I'm going to really work my guts out for you. And as you would for me. That's why so many people come and help in our Buddhist society. Because we're kind to them. That's why it's very easy to get people to work at even our monasteries. You know why? Because we're kind. That is what people want and need. And it's also good for the economy. So having a bit of kindness, gentleness, especially kind speech, goes such a long way. How do you treat your kids? Clean up your room. Maybe you can tell your teenager, little darling, and if it's not too much problem for you, I know you're very busy on your computer games. But would you mind? If it's too much, never mind. Well, you've tried everything else and it doesn't work. So maybe you can try that. Yes, I was trying to remember some of my experiences with my father. You know how he taught me not to steal? He once came up to me and said, he was very poor. My background was he was always very sick. So he was often out of work through sickness. He had bad asthma and all sorts of other things wrong with him. He died when I was only 16. That's about as long as he managed to survive with his sick body. So because of his sickness, we were always really poor. I still remember when £1 note, maybe this was in 1958 or something, it was on this little shelf above the fire, had an open fire to keep the apartment warm. And there was a breeze. And the £1 note got caught in this breeze and went into the fire. And my father just, even though he was going to burn himself, tried to get it out of the fire. He burnt his hand and couldn't get the pound out. I remember my mother and father bursting into tears. You know, because £1 was such a lot of money. And it just got into the fire. And that's, you know, I always remember that. It's just, you know, what a little amount of money meant to poor people. But anyway, even though he was poor, I remember him coming up to me once and said, son, never steal anything. Instead, because if you steal, you'll get into trouble, and that make me really suffer. If you really want anything that bad that you're willing to try and steal it, just let me know, and I'll buy it for you, whatever it is. And when I realized that, you know, he was willing to borrow and work hard or whatever it is to get the money to get what I wanted if I wanted to steal it, I realized how important not stealing was to him. He would really, you know, sacrifice his own lunch or dinner so his son never needed to steal. So there's no way I could steal after that. That was actually teaching marvelous lessons. He was never going to punish me. Instead, he was just going to teach me by another method, respecting me and me respecting him. So sometimes the way we teach our kids, you know, sometimes all they really need is time with you. They want to be respected. They want to be loved, as you do too. And please notice the way we speak to one another. It's amazing how a little bit of praise got such a long way. I remember because I was a school teacher, I remember I had to train as a school teacher before I became a monk. I remember seeing this video of a crew going into an inner London comprehensive school. Huge number of kids, you know, from disadvantaged backgrounds, and with a guy with a camera just interviewing people and just seeing how things happened. I always remember they interviewed this one girl, maybe 13 or 14, and she said what really made her day, and they caught it on camera, when one of the teachers, busily just passing this girl in the corridor, just stopped and said, "How are you today? Are you feeling okay now?" And that meant so much to the teenager, just that her teacher had just asked how she was with kindness. Because that is so rare. If you're a school teacher, if you're in business, whatever, just being kind to someone. "Are you okay today? Is there anything I can do for you?" Those little acts of kindness, they create a community. They create this relationship, this happiness and harmony, which is what really people want. And if you have a boss, or if you have a partner, if you have a father or a child like that, they're going to value that so much, because it is rare in our world. It's what people really want and what they really need. Which is why that talking like this, telling the story of a little ox, and it's not just an ox, it works with people as well. I remember the last time I told that story, quite a few years ago, at least that's what I remember, someone coming up to me afterwards and they said, "That works," because they were at one of these school fetes, and they had camel rides, and they saw this guy who'd arrived late for this school fete, and he said, "I always wanted to ride a camel, but the camel rider was just closing up for the day." And so the guy said, "Look, I really want to, I'll pay you double, and it's for the school." So he paid double, so the camel, he told the camel, "Come, get down, I want to ride on you." And of course the camel wouldn't move. He said, "Look, I paid double." And he was angry, and the camel owner said, "Stop it, that's not the way to treat this camel." And he saw this camel owner get to the side of this camel, it's been a hot day, and talking to the camel, "Look, you've worked really hard today, I know it's very hot, we've raised a lot of money for the school, it's a wonderful thing you've done. And this man has come such a long way, he just wants to ride you once. Would you please just get down this one last time?" And that's all he needed to do, a bit of kindness. And that camel went straight down and let the man ride on its back. He saw that with a camel who was very tired. If that works with animals, can't that work with human beings? It does. I've tried it before. Someone's angry at you, give them kindness. Someone who you want to sort of heal a relationship with, and you just talk to them kindly. Wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't you like someone to actually just say, "Well, if it's not too much trouble, I know you're really tired, I know it's very busy, but could you?" If people can actually change their speech patterns and come from kindness instead of coming from this aggressiveness, wouldn't the world be a wonderful, beautiful place? And we would get more work done, we would have more harmony, people would come and help out, and that's the sort of world I want to build and I want to live in. And that's the sort of world we can build. So to do this, find out what people really, really want, the kindness, the goodness. Let go of all this punishment and getting angry at people. If people do let you down, it's probably they've got some reason for it. Again, always this wonderful forgiveness of giving other people the benefit of the doubt. If your husband does come home late, don't think he's got a mistress or he's been down the pub. Just give him the benefit of the doubt. Just like that monk we gave the benefit of the doubt to. When he arrived in Perth, I went to pick him up from the airport. It's many years ago. I won't tell you who this is, but he's a very well-known monk in this organization. When he came back from Adelaide, he was smelling like a brewery. Smell of whiskey all over. I said, "What's happened to you?" And he said, "No, look, this is what happened. He said, I was in the aircraft, sitting next to this guy who was so anxious of flying that he had to have whiskey after whiskey after whiskey. He said that's the only way he could calm his nerves, being afraid of flying. And he was sitting next to me, and I was talking to him, and just as we were coming in to land in Perth, he had a full glass of whiskey in his hand when there was turbulence. And he said, the whiskey spilled all over me. That's why I smell so much of whiskey. So what would you do? Give him the benefit of the doubt? Of course you had to, he's a good buck. But my goodness, he really stank of whiskey. Well, my own story, I think I told this over in Malaysia, about the two girls in a bikini on Bunbury Beach. Did I tell this recently? No. I used, because I'm a kind monk, I was teaching in the Bunbury prison many, many years ago before I got really busy. So I went there once a week to teach, and it was in the evening time. The only way to get down from Serpentine where I lived was to get in the train which went to Bunbury, but it's only twice a day. So I had to go in just after lunch, and I would have the free afternoon in Bunbury. And one afternoon, free afternoon, went down to the beach. It was deserted and really quiet, a great place to meditate. So I went there and meditated for 2 hours. You know, I meditate a long time. When I'm here, I can't meditate for a long time, because if I meditated for 2 hours here, when I open my eyes, you guys will all be gone. So I have to do only half an hour or 20 minutes, whatever it is. But I was meditating there for 2 hours when I came up with a really nice meditation on Bunbury Beach. First thing I knew was just two people sitting next to me. And I turned around, and this was 17-year-old, blonde, drop-dead gorgeous, in a bikini, sitting right next to me. And I turned the other side, it was a redhead. Nice, beautiful, long hair, and a big, you know what? Also in a bikini, sitting next to me too. I thought, oh God, what's happening? I'm a monk, okay? And if anyone had taken a photograph of me on Bunbury Beach with two floozies on either side in bikinis, I'd have never been able to explain myself. But you know, all it really was, it was that day they'd just finished the TEE exam. You know, the end of school examinations. So Bunbury High School was just, you know, maybe 100, 200 meters away. They finished their last exams, yes. And what do boys and girls in Australia do when they live next to the beach after the exams? Get into the bathers, in the bikinis, down the beach, and relax. They've been working so hard with the end of the year exam, well, the end of school exams. Now, party time. And they've seen this quiet monk, me, sitting there so peacefully. They were really interested in meditation. So they're actually sitting there patiently waiting for me to come out of meditation so they could ask me questions about meditation and Buddhism. They were really interested. So they started asking me questions. And I made the conversation very quick. So I could escape. But that's actually the truth of it. But how many people will believe that? If you'd have seen me, just passing by and seen Ajahn Brahm sitting with two beautiful girls, you know, in bikinis on a beach, you know, what would you have thought? So that's why, please give people the benefit of the doubt. Even if you're wrong, it's much better to trust a person and have your trust eventually just, you know, found out it's been misplaced than never to trust anybody at all. That's what happens sometimes, you know, you get disappointed once and you think, I'm not going to trust the guy ever again. I mean, what are you doing that for? You know, you're just closing your heart to relationships. You're closing your life off because you've been hurt once or twice. No, please. Have that trust. Come out of the concrete bunkers people put their hearts in. Yeah, you do get hurt, but you grow. You learn. And you can love much more. You can form relationships with other people. And when you can form relationships with other people, you can form relationships with yourself as well. That's one of the most wonderful things about Buddhism. You know, it teaches you how to love yourself. You know, when you say those words in the West, love yourself, that's being egotistical, proud. You know, you really up yourself. What sort of person is that to love yourself? I said, no, that's what we're supposed to do in Buddhism. It's wonderful actually to read that. To respect yourself, to be kind to yourself, to treat other people as you treat yourself means to treat yourself as you would treat other people. You forgive others, forgive yourself. Speak kindly to others, speak kindly to yourself. You wish other people, have you wished other people like Merry Christmas and Happy New Year? Have you wished yourself that yet? Go home tonight, look in the mirror and say, Happy New Year, me. Have a great one. Why are you laughing? I do that. I do that all the time. Look in the mirror and say, have a great day, Ajahn Brahm. All the best to you. That's a terrible joke about the ox at Oxford, but yeah, I forgive you. Now, I'm really serious here. If you do that, you'll be far healthier and happier. If you can form a beautiful relationship with yourself and laugh at yourself, say stupid things to yourself, you can say stupid things to your partner, have fun. You don't have to be so serious. How many people want to have a partner who's always serious? Don't you want to have fun? You are your partner. So don't be so serious to yourself. You make a mistake, acknowledge it. Give yourself 50 strokes of the, I don't know, whatever you've got. If you've got an echidna, don't give 50 strokes of the echidna. No, echidna's like a porcupine. Don't throw that. If you've got a, what's those other, I don't know. The cane toads. Don't go 50 strokes of cane, they're poisonous. No, 50 strokes of a nice furry animal is really good. So forgive yourself, be kind to yourself, be kind to others. And don't think this doesn't work. It does work. You know it works. That's what you would like. So do unto others what they would do unto you. Do unto yourself as you do unto others. Make that your New Year's resolution. To speak more kindly to yourself and others. To act more trustworthy to yourself and others. To give others the benefit of the doubt. And to give yourself the benefit of the doubt so you don't need to feel so guilty. And you thought it was a good idea, it didn't work out, but you did your best. Give yourself the benefit of the doubt. And then when you're not so critical, you'll have a happier, more peaceful time inside of yourself, and you will create a much happier and more peaceful life. And also, our economy will also grow. It's prosperity all around. People, human beings, are the resource of our world. Not iron ore, not coal, not oil, people. So we need to cultivate that resource to make it grow. And when that resource is very strong and rich, the economy will be rich also. So that's prosperity for the new year. Thank you for listening. Now look, I was just in Malaysia, and whenever I hear these three sort of anemic sadhus, I really get upset. If you're going to do anything, give it energy, give it power. So the three sadhus I've taught throughout the world are not just sadhu. It's, don't do it yet, just follow me. I'll just teach you first. It's sadhu. Okay, and all together? Sadhu. Isn't that much more fun? No. Okay, very good. Well done. Okay. So that's going to start the new year. So whoever gives a talk here, remember at the end, the three big sadhus. More fun. Okay, now are there any questions from the overseas? I think they're going to come up. But while we're waiting, are there any questions here about what I've been talking about this evening? Just off the cuff. I was actually going to speak about something else, but never got around to it. There we go. Have we got anything on the computer there? Okay, a question from the audience? No questions on the computer. Our computer's not working. So any comments or questions about the talk about just especially speaking kindly to one another? Don't be so critical. Yes, thank you. The story of the head monk and the thief was not a true story. It was based on a true story, but changed. Oh, it's 86. The true story was actually, it was a Buddhist monk in the time of the Ayutthaya kingdom in Thailand. And the main form of transport, you know, in the about 250 years ago in Thailand was the boats. They had canals everywhere and rivers. So it was boats and elephants where the boats wouldn't go. And so every monastery would have, you know, a couple of boats. They were all, if you ever go to Thailand these days, the same as Sri Lanka as well, all the very old monasteries were next to rivers, because that's the only way people could come and go. So he had one of these monasteries on the Chao Phraya River, but, you know, near Ayutthaya area, had three boats there, and the monk did sort of wake up early in the morning and see a thief sort of trying to steal one of the boats. And what he did, he said, "You need this probably more than us. You know, this is quite a wealthy monastery." So he unlocked the boat and gave the thief the boat. You know, just like a wooden boat, you know, just for rowing. And when the other monks and also the committee heard about that the next day, then they said, "Where's the boat gone?" And the monk said, "Look, this thief is obviously really poor. He needed it more than we do. So he didn't steal it, okay? No need to tell the, you know, the police or the soldiers. I gave it to him." He said, "But you've got no right to give it. It's temple property." Look, I was kind, compassionate. That's what we're supposed to do as Buddhists. And so it got all around the city. And by the end of the day, people had donated three boats to that monastery. He made a profit. Or like the similar story happened here in Western Australia, in Perth. I remember reading this in the West Australia, and I read the newspaper. A lot of it you forget, but this story I've never forgotten. There was a kid, he was riding home from school on a BMX bike. No, really good bike. And on his way home, he saw a couple of kids about 2 or 3 years older than him. They had caught a rabbit, and they were mistreating it, torturing it. And even though these kids were much bigger than him and could beat him up, he stopped his bike, got off and said, "Leave the rabbit alone, leave the rabbit alone, you're hurting it." And of course these kids say, you know, basically, "Get stuff, get out of here, otherwise we'll, you know, hit you." They weren't going to stop because of a kid 2 or 3 years younger than them. So the kid said, "If you give me the rabbit, I'll give you my bike." It was a really good bike. And the two hoodlums said, "Yeah, that makes sense." So they handed over this rabbit, and he gave them his bike. So when he got home, his parents asked, "Where's your bike gone?" He told what had happened. They said, "What a kind kid you are, that you give away your bike to save a poor little rabbit." I think one of them must have known some reporter in the West Australian, and it was put on the headline, the front page the next day, you know. We always try and criticize our kids, but there was a kind kid who would actually give a bike, which was really expensive, just to save the life of a poor rabbit. There was an article about the kids in the next day's paper. Three companies had sent him new BMX bikes. It's good karma, because there was a kid who did something really good. You never lose when you're kind. So it was based on that story, those two stories, about, you know, what would happen if you're very kind. If I did that, would you think that's money well spent? Isn't it more important? Yeah, we do raise funds for our buildings, we always need money. But in the end, I'm a monk. People are more important than things. And I said this to the committee over and over again, I say it to you, and I say it to the monks in the monastery, what's the point of having a Buddhist temple or a church or a mosque which looks really wonderful when the people inside aren't wonderful, when they're not kind, they're not generous, they're not peaceful? I always remember the meaning of a church. I remember looking it up in an old dictionary. The meaning of a church is not the building, it's the people. A church is a collection of people. But now we've lost that, and we think the church is the building, not the people who come inside of it. And now the building is more important than the people. So we've got these huge churches, these huge even temples, and no one's inside. Why are there no one inside? Because the buildings are more important than the people are. And they say, you know, don't walk on the grass. Don't dirty the carpet. You know, don't slam the doors. What's more important? The buildings or the people who live in there? Your house. Have you got a beautiful house where you live? I don't care what size it is or what suburb. Yours is a beautiful house if the people inside are happy. Then it's a beautiful house. It's not location, location, location. Any real estate agents here, you've got it wrong. It's people, people, people. Doesn't that make sense? Yeah, of course it does, yeah. So that's why, hopefully, that if I've actually, and the other monks and nuns has taught here, if we've actually got a message out, and if a thief comes, we say, okay, you can take it. And you think, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Whatever they take, you give three times the next day. So we make a profit. No, I don't mean that. Then you understand that this is the real thing. This is what religion, what spirituality is supposed to be about. Kindness. And I don't care whether you're Christian or Muslim or Hindu. People recognize it. Yes, this makes sense. This is a sort of spirituality religion I want. Don't have to call it a name. It's just kindness. Any other question? Did I answer your question okay, sir? Very good. Because, you know, stories, never let the truth stand in the way of a good story. That's what I was saying. So if it's a good story, then you can elaborate on it. If you tell that story to somebody else, elaborate on it. You know, just change the details here and there. Because stories should actually grow. Yeah.
Miss Baum, can you just elaborate on the relationship between trust and responsibility?
Ah, yeah, trust and responsibility. Sometimes if you trust somebody, that they learn responsibility. Like you have a kid. Look, somebody came to see me last week in the monastery. A young girl, I won't say from what nationality, but living in Australia. And she was having trouble with her parents, letting her, you know, go out in the evenings. Because they're worried about her. She did actually go out with somebody and then it didn't work out and she got into trouble because of that. But now her parents don't trust her, so they don't let her go out. And so if the parents are here this evening, please let her go out. You trusted her, and if she didn't live up to that trust, she made a mistake. But don't think I can't trust her any longer. Otherwise you put your daughter in this prison in the home, and she suffers so much, and basically she will hate you for the rest of her life. If anybody doesn't live up to that trust, trust them again. So they can learn responsibility. Otherwise, they will never learn at all. A lot of people, you know, if they do make a mistake, they are remorseful. They think, oh, I shouldn't have done that. They do hurt inside. This is one of the things which I found, you know, when I went to teach in prisons. For those of you who think that people in jail would just want to do it again, they don't. There were some really hard prisoners I got to know. When you first saw them, they say, I don't care, as soon as I get out, I'm going to do the same again. They didn't seem to be showing remorse. But all they were doing, they had remorse, they just covered it up and they just would not let anybody else know how they felt. They were tough guys. But you know, when you got a relationship with them, you got to know them and they did trust you and you trusted them. That's when they opened up. And they all kept on saying, I just wish that, God, I never did that. I feel so bad about that. I just can't forget it. Every day I try to block it out of my mind. I just can't. So there's no such being I've ever seen who hasn't got remorse for what they've done. They hide it and they don't show it. But my goodness, they feel it. Someone just showed me an article about one of the real monsters who lived in England called, I think, Francis West or something. He did his horrendous torture murders of young people with his wife. If anyone was a monster, he was. He eventually committed suicide. He hung himself in jail. He couldn't stand himself. It looked like he had no remorse. But my goodness, they do. So this is actually just, if you trust somebody, they'll actually live up to that trust. They'll get responsibility in the long term. So never think, okay, my kid, you know, they've broken my trust, they've made a mistake. Never think, I can't trust them again. No, you have to trust them again. Let them grow, let them learn responsibility. That's the only way people learn. So for me, responsibility comes with trust. Take away trust, you take away responsibility. There's another lady who comes here very regularly, I remember, because her husband died. And sometimes she looked to me for like fatherly advice for her two twins. I remember her coming to me, sitting here, saying, my twins were about 18, they wanted to go to nightclub. So I can't let them go to nightclubs. You know, in Northbridge, there's all sorts of bad people, there's drugs, there's alcohol. So I can't do that. I said, look, please, let your kids go to nightclub. They're 18. You brought them up well, they're really good kids. Trust them. See what they do. So because she respected me so much, the kids went to the nightclub, had a wonderful time. They turned out to be really, really good women now. One's a doctor, I think the other one's an accountant. We did a marriage ceremony for one of them last year. Beautiful kids. They were trusted and they learnt responsibility. And they're beautiful kids. Never underestimate your kids, which a lot of parents do, out of fear. We don't want our kids to be hurt, but they have to be hurt sometimes so they can learn and grow and be responsible.
Thank you, Bum. I had another thought on the and different angle on it. What if you're responsible for an organisation and you trust somebody to do something and they take you for a ride?
Yeah.
Do you then continue to trust people or do you change the way in which it works?
No, if in that situation you continue to trust them. And eventually they live up to that trust. You know, I know that sometimes I read all these stories about people who, when they were young, or maybe even middle-aged, they stole from organizations or they stole from like Bunnings or somewhere. And then they actually go back and they send a donation. Sorry, when I was young I stole $20 and they send $50 back. It's beautiful when that happens. Because actually we learn. If anybody has mistreated an organization, I was just remembering this now. Remember in Victor Hugo's Les Miserables? When, who was that? Jean Valjean. You know, he was, apparently they just got a new movie about that out recently. I was reading about it in the newspapers. So remember that story of Jean Valjean? He was a criminal. He was put in jail for stealing a loaf of bread. I remember sort of reading it. Brilliant book. I mean, it's a really brilliant book. And they asked him, why did you steal? He said, because my family were hungry. Oh, gee, that gets to you. He was doing it for his kids. They were starving. But anyway, that was no excuse in those days. Got put in this bar, he escaped. And then eventually, just he was desperate, he went to a church and he stole the silver candlesticks, remember that? And when the priest saw him, this is actually a true story. Well, this is Les Miserables, but it's sort of a book. But the priest saw him stealing the candlesticks, which were worth a lot of money, they were silver. He said, no, you can keep them. They're yours, you're poor. And that was in Victor Hugo's book. He trusted this thief. Yeah, yours, take them. And from that, Jean Valjean, he made a life. And that was actually one of the inspiring moments of that book when I read it. That's a priest. That's what monks, priests should do. So you trust a person. And that, he lived up to that trust. He became a really good man as a result. And even if 100 people, they fail that trust, and they keep ripping you off, if one person lives up to it, it was money well spent. That's why for me, it's people, not things, are important.
Thank you, Brian.
Anyway, that's me. I may be irresponsible. Don't make me the treasurer of any organisation. It'll be lost, but you know, I can make me the monk. Okay, yeah. Okay. Now, number one, there's no question which is silly. Every question is respected. So what sadhu means, it is well, it is good. That's what it really means. So we do the sadhu, it's well, it's good, you know, you're wonderful. It's just an old Indian word, which we actually do. It's well, it's good. So that's why people say sadhu. So, thank you for that. That's it for this evening. It's gone a bit late, but I don't think you are worried about that. Hope you enjoyed the talk this evening. Another one coming next week. Have a good time, and hopefully 2013 is a wonderful year of peace and harmony and growth for each one of you. So now we can actually just pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, and then we can go on our ways.